translate. That's the nothing personal word of the day. It is Thursday, March 21st, 2024, and I'm coming to you live from State College, Pennsylvania. That is why you've got the background you've got, manufactured by me inside of a hotel room on campus, here to talk to a bunch of people at a sports business conference. But of course, the show goes on, because that's what we do. When we're on the road doing a tour, and there's information at davidsampsonpodcast.com, coming to a city near you, starting in Philadelphia on April 2nd, going to Atlanta, Nashville, Boston, go to davidsampsonpodcast.com. Hopefully you'll come see us. But guess what? At 8 a.m., we'll still be doing a show live come Monday when we're on DraftKings Network at 10 a.m. We'll still be doing a show here live at 8 a.m. I have not had the best of nights, not because it's not a nice hotel or I don't love being back on college campuses, although this is not my favorite Big Ten school or the Big 15 school. Obviously, you know I'm a Badger. But I've been up watching the Dodgers play the Padres. The Padres are winning 10-6 right now. But I've really been up trying to figure out how to communicate to you a story that will be all over your feed all day today and started yesterday about Shohei Ohtani and his translator, Ipe Mizuhara. And I want to be super careful because there are so many different stories out there, so much complexity, and people online or people who are less than serious people are poking fun at this and trying to get you to laugh about it. And it's not that I don't want to entertain you. I just want you to be armed with certain facts about this story, with what baseball is doing behind the scenes at the moment, with what the Dodgers are doing, and understanding that we don't have answers to some very serious questions. Let's start at the beginning. Everything's going great. Ohtani, two knocks in his first game. Dodgers win game one. No indication there's an issue. They panned the dugout. There's Shohei with Ipe doing what they do, being jocular, hanging out during the course of the game. We saw them when they were Angels. Now we see them when they're Dodgers. Translators have become part of the fabric of the dugout. It used to be that there were only translators for Asian players in Major League dugouts. Now there are translators for every player who doesn't speak English. There is a Spanish translator. It is now part of the CBA that every team must have a translator in the clubhouse. Rules about what the translator does, where the translator can go, all of those are clearly delineated by Major League Baseball. Ohtani's translator was almost like a coach. Very different than other translators around the game for other Japanese players. When we hired a translator for Ichiro with the Marlins, I want to explain how that worked. We were negotiating with Ichiro and his agent, and we were told that when you have Ichiro, if he is a Marlin, you will hire Allen. He will be an employee of your team, and this is what you will pay him. It was not negotiable. When you are negotiating with Ichiro or with any player, you have to identify things that are or are not negotiable. That's what I've always talked to you about when it comes to negotiation. What are the points where you can get movement from the other side? What are the points where you cannot? Translator, not negotiable. This is my guy. Do you know that I never did a background check on him? We never did a check at all. Ichiro wanted him hired, we hired him. I'm pretty sure that Allen, who is one of the great guys you'll ever meet, and I've gotten to know him so well since I met him, which is now, I guess, 9 years ago, maybe more. I can't remember Ichiro's first year with the Marlins. I want to say it was 15. What I can tell you is that he's incredible. But what can I also tell you is that I don't know that any other employee's ever been onboarded without a complete check, because it was just clear that this is what was going to be. And that's the way it was with Ohtani. When he signed with the Dodgers, you're getting Ipe Mizuhara, period. Now, He says that he makes between $300,000 and $500,000 a year. He should have kept that to himself. There's a bunch of translators on a bunch of teams who are right now asking for a raise. But Ipe can say, hey, I do a bunch of different stuff with Shohei. I'm like a scout. I'm like his coach. It's a bit of horse hockey in that all of the translators are very close to the players with whom they work. So yesterday, we're watching the game and everything's fine. And then in the middle of the night, early in the morning, some point yesterday, depending on what time zone you're in, which brings me to an issue that I was having reading all the articles about Ohtani, when the translator met with ESPN on a Tuesday. Was that Tuesday in Korea? Was it Tuesday New York time or Seoul time? And then he went back and was with ESPN on Wednesday. Was that Wednesday in Korea or is today Wednesday in Korea? That was yesterday, but that was tomorrow and we're today. It can get very confusing with time differences. What we do know for sure is that the Los Angeles Dodgers fired Shohei Ohtani's interpreter. They fired him. He's not in the dugout today for game two in Korea. He lasted one game. He's the Aaron Rodgers of the Los Angeles Dodgers. One game, gone. So when you read that he was fired, the thought is, obviously, he did something acute that the Dodgers didn't know about, that only found out about, and had to act immediately. When I read about a player or being released like that, or an employee being fired like that, you're thinking some sort of crime committed, a violent crime, a nonviolent crime. You're thinking some sort of action that took place relating to sexual harassment. These are the things that go into my head. Here's what I didn't have on the bingo card. That Ipe Mizuhara was a gambling addict who owed $4.5 million in theory to a bookie, and Shohei Ohtani paid that off for Ipe. Except the first thing I read is Ipe stole the money from Shohei Ohtani to pay off his bookie. Then I read that Ohtani knew about it and gave the money to Ipe. And then I read that Ohtani didn't actually know about it. And that was all from a source named Ipe. The craziest part of the story that's only going to get crazier and scarier for baseball is that the fired employee has two different stories on two different days. His first story is that he didn't bet on baseball. He only bet on soccer, NFL, NBA, Freudian slip. His first story is that Ohtani was aware and helped him pay off the debts because he asked Ohtani to help him. And that Ohtani directly paid the bookie because Ohtani didn't want to give him money for fear that he would gamble it away without paying his debts. But then the next day, or the next, that day in Korea, who can tell? He said, no, Ohtani had no involvement at all. Ohtani didn't know I was betting. What changed in between those two stories? Baseball, Major League Baseball, did they or did they not have wind that the Los Angeles Times was doing an investigation into an illegal gambling ring in California? Did they or did they not know that ESPN was getting a 90-minute interview with the translator? Did Major League Baseball, once they found out that the translator gave the interview and implicated Ohtani, did Major League Baseball get involved and say, hold on, Dodgers, you're firing him. ESPN, you can't run that. Nez, the agent slash spokesman, who's unnamed so far, but my bet is it's the agent, but we don't know. The spokesman is disavowing the original interview to ESPN where Ohtani gets implicated, saying, I have no idea what Mizuhara is even talking about. Like we're in a Jason Bourne movie. Or Mission Impossible. You are disavowed. Maybe it is like that. I wonder what Wesley Snipes and Sean Connery would have to say about this situation where Ipe, people are saying he's taking the fall for Ohtani. He is standing up like any respectful, proud Japanese man would do, and he will take the fall for his boss, his superior. That's one hell of an act to take. Is it unheard of in Japan? Maybe, maybe not. Is that really what's happening here? Can baseball really believe that in this day and age, we are all going to let it go? That Ipe acted on his own in the single bookie theory, where Ohtani had nothing to do with this, no knowledge of it of any kind? Why does that matter? Because it is against the rules for Ohtani to give money to a bookie under any scenario, period, because that's illegal gambling. It's against the law in California. Let's start with that. The other thing that the translator said, Ipe Mizuhara, which I have been struggling with for hours today, is he claims he doesn't know the difference between DraftKings, FanDuel, and a bookie. We do a lot of reads for DraftKings, MetalArk, nothing personal. DraftKings is a sponsor. DraftKings may be the best company I've ever seen, including any of the commercials that I watch for eczema, where you could end up with kidney cancer. I'm making that up, but remember the commercials where now there's 30 seconds of all the bad things that can happen to side effects? How many times have I read to you all the things that can happen if you gamble too much, what the rules are, how to gamble responsibly? It is DraftKings' job under the law, and they do it morally, ethically, and it's good for business. Shockingly, I don't know if you know this, it's not good for alcohol companies for there to be alcoholics. That may seem counterintuitive. They don't want there to be alcoholics because alcoholics either die or quit. That's bad for business. Rehab and death, bad for business. Gambling companies don't want gambling addicts. They don't want people losing their jobs and their homes. They don't want people getting divorced or committing crimes. They want people gambling. Same with casinos. They get no thrill when they have to collect somebody's house or they cause a divorce. None of that is positive for them. Continued business. That's how you can guarantee revenue and your flow of revenue. For him not to know the difference between DraftKings, a legitimate company, FanDuel, a legitimate company, and giving money to a bookie, is that really, does anyone believe that? And is it true if you don't believe one thing that some person says that you then have to investigate everything that person says? Or can there be independent mistruths, but Ohtani didn't bet at all, he gave the money or he didn't give the money, he knew or he didn't know, but either way, there was no betting on baseball. It's interesting that Major League Baseball wants it to be very clear, and everyone's been very clear to report, there is no instance of any betting on baseball, because can you imagine if Shohei Ohtani's translator was betting on baseball? That's Pete Rose, folks. That's endgame. You think baseball wants to suspend Shohei Ohtani? So what are they doing now? Baseball is meeting in Korea. They're watching a game, excited to fly home, privately after the game, commercially in the morning, Korea time, trying to figure out how long they can go with, we have no comment because we are investigating the situation. Right now, they let the Dodgers lead with that and end with that, and I'm fine. The Dodgers are aware of media reports and are gathering information. There's only one bit of mistruth with that. The Dodgers aren't gathering information. MLB is gathering information. Remember when the Dodgers had to release a statement on Bauer or on Urias? It was all supportive of what MLB is doing, MLB's policies. The Dodgers simply in their statement confirmed that Ipe has been terminated. What they didn't say is that MLB is investigating. What I promise you here today, MLB is investigating. There are attorneys involved. There are U.S. attorneys. There's a criminal case involved here. There's an entire FBI involvement. You'll read about Yasiel Puig being involved because this is the same gambling ring that we covered on Nothing Personal that Yasiel Puig was implicated in and had to make sure that we all knew he had no idea that anything bad was going on. He was just placing some bets. MLB needs to protect Shohei Ohtani. At about 4:45 a.m. this morning, I played a game with myself. And the game was an announcement from MLB that blank player, and I just thought of any player. And it happened to be that Jazz Chisholm was on my mind, but Jazz Chisholm is another player. Miguel Rojas was on my mind. That's a player. Look at any other player on the Dodgers. Insert player name, not superstar. How different would things be with MLB right now? How different would the narrative be? How fast would MLB ask the Dodgers to release that player? How quickly would MLB stand up and say, this is absolutely unacceptable? How quickly would MLB have a statement saying we are investigating, but then leaking out major suspension coming? You and I both know how fast it would be. We know that superstars are treated differently. My argument and my point of view, as difficult as this will be for MLB to hear, is that when it comes to gambling and the integrity of the game, you cannot treat the superstar differently. Many of you are going to go back and think about Michael Jordan and his forced two-year retirement and the conspiracy theory that gambling and the conspiracy theory that gambling was involved. I do believe that. I think he loved baseball, don't get me wrong. And that was back before leagues had relationships with gambling the way they do now. Now it's even more important. Now that the lines are so cloudy, now that you've got coaches, players who are willing to speak up about how tough it is dealing with the gambling part of the game. Just yesterday, out of nowhere, you had the coach of the, I can't remember what team, he's the Cleveland Cavaliers coach, the team that lost to the Heat last night, Bernie Bickerstaff's son, JB. He was talking about how insane it is when people yell at him from the stands, dude, we're up 10, the line's 11, don't take your starters out. We've got to cover. And he wants his starters out because he doesn't want them to get hurt. You've had players talking about how they feel like they're prop bets where they're keeping track of how many points they have or rebounds or what their combined over-under is. This is the dangerous line that we've been talking about for months and months and years on this show. And I understand why the leagues take the money. Owners want it. But if you don't want to be the WWE, the WWF, then you have to be strong, decisive, and thorough when it comes to this problem that is happening with Ohtani or any issue where gambling is involved. The rules have changed. You can gamble on other sports. Football sends 20 pages of rules to its players. You can be on campus or 20 steps off campus. You can be betting through your phone, but only if your phone is in a legal state, but not within a training facility. MLB has rules that are read to the players during spring training and then again given to the players and discussed throughout the season by executives like myself and coaches and managers and front office people. So what will baseball actually do? Baseball is going to punt. Baseball is going to wait. They're going to wait and wait. It's going to be a lot like the Trevor Bauer situation. They're going to investigate. It's going to take longer than it should because what they want to announce today is there's no story here. Shohei Ohtani had no idea. The interpreter, Ipe, has been fired. That's the end. The problem is it just doesn't make sense to me. Ohtani giving $4.5 million to Ipe, that's a taxable event. There's a gift tax implication there. You can't just give someone $4.5 million. You can lend it to them, but then there have to be agreements where interest is paid by Ipe back to Shohei. But there's documents that have to be written and signed. Maybe Shohei used his lifetime gift exclusion to give Ipe the money. You can't just pay the debt of somebody and not have it count. Not have it looked at for what it is. It's a gift. There's declaring that has to happen. There's IRS involvement. All sorts of authorities are involved in this. Major League Baseball cannot just say it's done and wash it away the way they want to because it's Shohei Ohtani. And so they won't. What else? Can you imagine not knowing? I just can't. All right. I want to switch topics right now to something that the people have been asking me about, and I think it's important to cover because there's some angry people in the U.S. who are not being able to watch these baseball games because you sleep more than I do. Coca, play some music.
You know what I want? I want to talk to Samson.
So you want to talk to Samson. Get on my Twitter at David P. Samson or get to davidsamsonpodcast.com. Ask me a question. Hello, David. Hello. Thanks. Good to see you. I don't understand why MLB and NBA and all the leagues are so interested in playing games outside the United States. I had to watch opening day at 4 a.m. I guess I know what time zone you're in. The Dodgers are my team, and the only way to see Ohtani play his first game was to wake up early or stay up late. This is horse hockey. Okay. Thank you. Thanks for reaching out. Where do you live in the mountain area? Because it was 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific, 4 a.m. Mountain time. Are you from Denver? I assume if you're from Denver, my guess is you stayed up late and not woke up early. But hey, that's just me assuming. Let me explain how MLB International works and NFL and NBA. You may be wondering why the NFL is interested in playing 9:30 games streaming exclusively on Peacock. That's as much as you can give to the fans in Europe because that's still a 2:30 start in England, a 3:30 start in the rest of continental Europe, most of continental Europe. The international games are not done for you. For those of us in the United States, there is zero consideration given. It is all about the following three revenue streams. One, the broadcast deal that comes into the league from international broadcast partners for regular season games. Two, the amount of profit that's made because a promoter guarantees money to the leagues to host games at a venue internationally. Three, the licensing and merchandise that is done internationally, that is incremental money. Add up all of those dollars, broadcast being the top, the promoter paying for the game being the second, and then licensing being the third. The fourth level is the overall global footprint of the game. The fifth level is the little FU that happens between commissioners of the different sports. Starting from number five, Roger Goodell gets to look at Adam Silver and say, you think you're going to play games in London, or Rob Manfred, you're going to bring the Yankees, Red Sox to London? Good luck. We own London. How many times have you heard the NFL say that? Baseball goes to Asia, say, we own Asia. And then the NBA, Adam Silver calls up Rob and say, heard of Yao Ming? Do you know how much business we're doing in China? We're doing more business in China than you're doing in Japan and Korea times two. Then Roger Goodell says, hey, can we go back to talk about Europe? Then baseball says, what about the Dominican Venezuela? And Adam Silver and Roger Goodell say, yeah, we really don't care. There's not much money there. How about Puerto Rico? Yeah, not too much money there either. There's a competition that goes on between the leagues because the owners want to be able to say, hey, our league is the global sport. Our sport is global. Then you've got the owners telling the commissioner, hey, we want more money distributed to us. So the commissioner goes to his departments, one of which is the international department, and says, hey, generate more revenue. The international department says, I can do that, but you got to play games. That's all they care about internationally, is having actual games played. How do you feel about exhibition? Not that great. It's X dollars for exhibition, but it's Y dollars for regular season. Now, if you'd play a playoff game internationally, like a Super Bowl, forget about it. A neutral site World Series game played in Japan. Do you have any idea the amount of money that the owners would make? There are certain lines that every league will not cross. Though I do believe a Super Bowl will be in London, might I add, while it's streaming and pay-per-view. So going over to Asia is a little more complicated from a time difference standpoint because you cannot play a game at 7 a.m. in Korea. That would be 8 p.m. Eastern time. You can't play at 8 a.m. Korean time. Why? Because the union has to approve, both as part of the CBA and as a practical matter, the players have to approve these international trips. Did you know that players, all of them who are in Korea, are getting extra money for going to Korea? It's part of the CBA. In addition to their salaries, they make extra money. So for rookies, they love when their teams play internationally because it's a pretty good sizable bonus they each get. For Ohtani, it's actually fantastic for him to play because he gets to make a bunch of sponsored paid appearances. For Yamamoto, pitching 43 pitches in the first inning, not getting out of the first inning, not as ideal. So the players go there and they won't agree to play morning games. Major League Baseball players, as a matter of fact, professional athletes in general, are not awake at 8 a.m. So therefore, what you do is you have to play at the time that is better for the promoter, better for the players, and that's a regular night game, 7 p.m. That's the time that these Korea games are being played. It just so happens to be 6 a.m. in New York, 3 a.m. in Los Angeles. So for all of you complaining that they don't care about you, you're right. But that's the whole point of it. It's to care about them, to care about the countries where the games are being played. You can't serve both masters at once because of the sun. So if you don't want to wake up and watch Ohtani, then watch him on opening day, March 28th, and pretend that's the opener. Or don't watch it when your football team goes over to Europe. Or don't go to the games. It's all totally up to you. The amount of time that we spent on the MLB International Committee, which I was on, thinking about the impact of the international games on our domestic fans, wait for it, zero. That's how many minutes we spent thinking about the U.S. fans when it came to international games. When it comes to other things, you're all we think about. International, not. Thank you for that question. I don't agree with you that it's horse hockey. All right, nothing personal pick of the day. We had the Dodgers yesterday with the run line, and that was a winning bet. So we were 35-37 going into last night's game. The Dodgers won the game 5-2. I didn't get a chance to give you my Padres bet. They're playing right now. I had in the rundown, Coca, as you know, you're the only one who has proof. I had the loser of yesterday's game winning today's game because MLB very much wants a split. The players want a split. It's not fun to schlep to Japan the way the A's did, lose two games and fly home. Not ideal. So I thought there'd be a split. Right now it's 11-8. Padres are winning. And I had that, except it didn't count because I didn't say it on the show. I did say Sixers plus 8.5. How did that go? The Suns crushed the Sixers by 13. We're down to 35-38. I've got a pick for tonight. Can the Knicks possibly win again on the road the way they crushed me by beating the Warriors, though making me happy? I don't think so. They're playing in Denver. Excited as I am about the Knicks and their chances, there is a Grand Canyon-like gap between the Knicks and the Nuggets, and I think that will be exhibited tonight. The Nuggets will win by double digits. They'll have to. That is my pick of the day. No more regular season baseball till Thursday the 28th. We will have MLB previews. We'll have picks of the day, sponsored picks of the day maybe. You never know. Hey, DraftKings is interested in the Nothing Personal live tour, Coca. Did I tell you that? How funny is that? All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, we are going to review one of our top 100 movies, Confessions of a Dangerous Mind. And then we're going to talk more about employees stealing from employers, the way that it was rumored that Ipe stole from Ohtani, but now we're not sure whether that actually happened. We're sort of sure that what happened in Minnesota happened, and we're going to talk about it after this.
Texting privacy policy and terms and conditions posted at textplan.us. Texting enrolls for recurring automated text marketing messages. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Individual results may vary. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You've lost so much weight. How'd you do it?
I got medical treatment for weight loss through Zelty and lost 50 pounds. I struggled for the longest time, but Zelty makes it easy and affordable to get weight loss treatment 100% online. Zelty providers can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications clinically shown to help people lose weight, like Wegovy, Zepbound, and others.
I've heard those medications can help you lose weight, but aren't they expensive?
Zelty can help get the medication covered by insurance, so it's as little as $0 a month.
What if you don't have insurance?
No problem. Zelty may be able to help you get other GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% off the price of name brand medications.
I'm ready to start losing weight. How do I get started with Zelty?
Just text.
Text THIN to 200-300 to get started today with Zelty and see if weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound are right for you. Don't wait. Text now for a link to your exclusive offer. Text THIN to 200-300. That's THIN to 200-300. THIN to 200-300.
Welcome back to Nothing Personal. How we doing? I'm sorry that first 20-minute segment may have been too long for some of you on Ohtani and what's happening with his interpreter, but there's going to be more, I promise you. I could have done the whole show just about that. I want to review Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, a movie, Coca. I don't know if you're going to get in the live chat on the Nothing Personal with David Sampson YouTube channel. Hit subscribe and get into the live chat at 8 a.m. Eastern every day. Coca did not know what The Gong Show was. Is that just an old thing that younger people have never heard of? The Gong Show, where you're performing? Like, pretend I'm doing a show, like a live show in Atlanta on April 8th. And people are at the show and they're not happy with it. And all of a sudden they whip out a huge gong and a huge drum hitter. And I don't know, I can't remember the name of that. And they bang the gong and you get taken off stage. That's where the expression is, oh my God, gong him. You've been gonged. It's The Gong Show. We're The Gong Show. Confessions of a Dangerous Mind is directed by George Clooney. It's the life story of Chuck Barris. Or is it? A young Michael Cera, Sam Rockwell, Drew Barrymore. Fun movie to watch again. Unbelievable story. A game show host being a spy? Is it possible? Maybe. You never know. Please watch it. George Clooney is such an accomplished director. His last movie, Boys in the Boat, I didn't review that favorably. But overall, I love George Clooney as a director. And Sam Rockwell, find me a movie that you don't like. What's the movie that I loved? Come on, Coca. The End World. There's like three words to it. And Sam Rockwell's in it. It's about him and running a pool. He works... Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, Sam Rockwell. Maybe it's too early. All right, Coca, bring up that spreadsheet, please. We're reviewing all of my top 100 movies, which you can find on davidsampsonpodcast.com. And Eric made this amazing spreadsheet. What you see now in yellow are movies we reviewed. What we see in green are movies we have not. And Coca hits a button, and boom, randomly we have our next movie for next Thursday. Go ahead, Matt. I'm going to need to put my glasses on. The King's Speech, number 55. What ape? Are you serious? Did you hit the random and it came up with the King's Speech? With all that's going on with William? And will he abdicate the throne? No. The King's Speech, Queen Elizabeth? William? Charles? Nobody? All right, I'll review it next week. All right, let's get back right now. Confessions of a Day, 4869. All right, I'll do better right now. We have, this is our final day to be clumsy with these breaks and transitions because the show is dark tomorrow. There is no Nothing Personal tomorrow, March 22nd, because Monday is our debut on DraftKings Network. We'll do the regular show at 8 a.m., a 50-minute show. For those of you paying attention, we've gone 50 minutes this whole week. Thank you for staying with us for the extra 5 minutes. So many of you have wanted 90 minutes. We're giving you 50. On DraftKings, it'll be over an hour from 10 to 11 a.m. But I've got to be better about breaks. So I've got to breathe and I've got to transition. So here we go. For you, Sarah, 4869. I can't wait to review the King's Speech as we continue our review of my top 100 list, which can be found on davidsampsonpodcast.com. For next week, I'll be reviewing The King's Speech. 1-1,000, 2-1,000, 3-1,000. How about employees stealing from employers? I'm not very much in favor of that. I had to fire a bunch of people for ticket malfeasance. Remember we did the story in Jacksonville, that guy who's in jail? How many millions did he steal from the Jaguars for all of his gambling and private jets and yachts and lifestyles of the I'm not rich and I'm only famous because now I use soap on a rope, that kind of thing, and how unbelievably horrible that story was. We went over the story years ago of the baseball employee who stole Houston's flight, their private analytics stuff, ended up being suspended by baseball and losing his freedom. We have another story like that going on in Minnesota. So quickly, A-Rod is out of the news with his deal to buy the Timberwolves. Remember we did the segment yesterday. Go check out yesterday's show, episode 1015 on March 20th, when we told you that A-Rod was going to get the Wolves. It wasn't going to be a problem. The fact that the Carlisle Group walked away, no worries. It took A-Rod like 4 hours to announce, hey, we got money elsewhere. We're good to go. I told you that would happen. But the T-Wolves are back in the news for something insane to me. They have an employee who has now been fired, who is arrested and will likely serve time. He stole a hard drive from the team's head of analytics. That's a felony, folks. He's in prison right now because he can't make bail. And here's the problem. We think that sports, what's proprietary about your scouting reports? It's not what Coke thinks about their formula to make Coke. That's not what Morgan Stanley thinks about their formula to figure out which companies to back and which not to. The reason why people have information that is called proprietary is they feel that there is something that they do that's different than what you do. They feel that their difference makes them better at looking at the same scenario that you're looking at. They can look at it better and therefore monetize it better, whether it's to make money, get more wins, sell more soda, whatever the case is, it all goes down to being better at what you do than what your competitor does. Corporate espionage has been going on for as long as there have been two corporations. Just like country-to-country espionage has been going on since even before Sean Penn and Timothy Hutton were the Falcon and the Snowman. If you know, you know. It's a great movie. You should watch it. How did we protect our information on a baseball team or on Wall Street? Passwords, firewalls, IT departments, compliance departments, cameras, security departments, law enforcement people, very Orwellian. Why? Because we believed that what we had was so good that people would want to take it. Every team believes that. Every company believes it. The T-Wolves believe that their analytics department's better than anybody else's, just like the Astros believe theirs is. And so do the Cardinals. But what do you do as an employee when you go from job to job? On a low scale, you do something simple like take paper clips, post-it notes, and printing paper. Maybe your files. But what if you're really doing something on a much larger scale because you have the ability to get a job with a competitor and get paid a ton of money, and you claim that you're smart about something? You claim that you developed something when in fact you're not that smart, you didn't develop it, and you're just generally full of crap. What do? You got to find out how the sauce is made. So you steal it. And that's what this guy did. Files that had information about player contracts, the T-Wolves' strategic plans, all sorts of things that would be incredibly valuable to other teams. So what this employee did when he got arrested is he panicked and he said, oh my God, no, you're missing what I'm saying. I only was borrowing his hard drive. He gave it to me to fix. So I fixed it and I just forgot to give it back to him. But the hard drive was actually confiscated and all the files had been copied. Why would he be copying files if he were just fixing it and then giving it right back? The cover-up is always worse than the crime. This guy is in deep trouble. So what do we do about it? This is what I've been thinking about. How do I stop people from stealing? And I've come to the conclusion that there's certain things that never end. There are certain traits that people have. Horniness is one. Delusion's another. It won't be me. Those are things that will never stop. No matter, people say millennials do this, Gen Xers do that, baby boomers are this or that. Guess what? You're just like we were, and I'm just like they are. We're all the same. So all I can do is put out one fire at a time. I can pretend and spend money and budget money and all the security issues. But if someone wants to really take something, they're going to take it. And there's no way to stop it. How about deterrent? Jail to me would be the biggest deterrent, losing your freedom. You don't think this Timberwolves employee knew that what he was doing would get him jail time? Of course he did. But not enough jail time that it was a deterrent, or the view that I'll never get caught was even stronger than the deterrent of losing his freedom. So the scale, maybe the only thing we can do is tip the scale, but all of a sudden we're taking away people's rights, and I'm not in favor of that. But you tip the scale enough, hey, you're accused of something, you're going to jail for 30 years, forget three strikes and you're out. It's one possible strike, it could be a spare, but if it's a strike, doesn't matter, you're in jail for 30 years. Boy, that'd be a deterrent, but that would really set up a lot of problems like framing. So my answer was, as an executive, is that I have to keep doing what these teams are doing, what these companies are doing, handling it one felon at a time. The NFL Competition Committee met yesterday. I love when the NFL Competition Committee meets because they are in such cover their ass mode. They're trying to reduce concussions, make sure that kids are playing football the way they're all playing baseball, make sure that nobody's getting hurt, making sure that nobody's suing them anymore. They come out with new rules every single year. You can't tackle that way. Our kickoffs will not allow you to be this way. Well, the competition committee, and I've served on one of these competition committees. This is a funny one, the NFL one. They've got two changes that they're trying to have approved by NFL owners, and they're both going to get approved, and one is funnier than the other. The first one is, remember those hip tackles where you're grabbing a player and then bringing them down and then landing on their legs, and we're like, ooh, that looks like a penalty. That must hurt. Well, the NFL wants to make it official, 15 yards automatic first down. If there's any sort of defender who grabs a runner with both hands, wraps the runner with both arms, and then unweights himself by swiveling or dropping his hips or lower body. So it's like grabbing a player from behind, dropping him, twisting, landing. Players can't do that. The NFL Players Association came out and said, this is absolute ridiculousness. Our players can't be told they can't tackle that way. What happens if they just do it? On instinct, they're trying to get a player down. We have to let defenders defend, or else you're not going to view defenders as premium and you're not going to pay them what they deserve to get paid, even in a salary cap league. There are two different constituencies. There's defense, offense. In baseball, pitchers, position players. You're always answering to people who've got two different things in mind. Running backs don't want to get hurt. Tight ends, receivers. Quarterbacks, protect them. Don't want to get hurt. If I can't be tackled, I get more runs, more yards, maybe more touchdowns. I get paid more. Defenders miss tackles. They become more interchangeable. They get paid less. So the NFL Players Association had to come out on the side of the defense with this one. I think they should just end up playing flag football because that would eliminate all concussions. And then it can just be 18 Pro Bowl games. Yes, I said 18 because the NFL, mark my words, they want an 18th game and they're going to get one. The second rule, though, is the one that I love even better. Kickoffs. The NFL has worked for years to make sure that people don't get concussions on kickoffs. I've always enjoyed kickoffs because what's more exciting than a kickoff return? What's more exciting than seeing grown men running 4.4s 100 miles an hour, the equivalent on a treadmill that I couldn't run for 2 seconds, running with a 70-yard head start and banging into a player who has barely gotten the ball. And then you say, wow, if that happened to me, I'd be dead. Let me watch more. That's the guilty pleasure of the audience. the NFL has been mandating to stop all of those things, which is why kickoffs are so damn boring now. Commercial, commercial, touchback, commercial, first down. Oh my God, get the game going. So the NFL owner said, hey, we have an idea. Let's take a page out of that brilliant league, the XFL, and let's start our kickoffs, but make sure that our players on the kicking team cannot start running until the receiving team catches the ball. And better yet, let's not give them a big head start. Let's position them all the way on the receiving team's 40-yard line. So the most yards they can run is 40 yards if the guy catches it in the end zone. If the guy catches it at the 10 and starts running, you start running from the 40. If you're the same speed, you'll meet in the middle, which is at the 25-yard line. What's going to happen after 15 yards? You can barely get underway in 15 yards. Brilliant. No, horrific. I've got a suggestion for the NFL competition committee. Just bite the bullet, eliminate the special teams people who are the returners. Sorry, Devin Hester, Hall of Famer. Eliminate kickoffs altogether. Either make it a punt or give the receiving team the ball first and 10 on the 30-yard line. Every possession. If you still want to pay for things by going to extra commercials, go to extra commercials. But don't do commercial, ridiculous play commercial. It's simply not worth it. The NFL just spent so much dang time figuring out these proposals. All right. In the remaining time, I want to talk about what happens when you sign a player. I have one more topic for you, Coca. What do you do when you sign a player to a huge contract and the player underperforms, or the player has a bad spring, or the player starts off badly? Nothing. And I want to explain what that means. Giancarlo Stanton can hit three home runs in a game like he did yesterday, or he can bat 069 in spring training with no home runs, and it will have zero impact on Stanton being in the starting lineup opening day and being in the lineup every day he's healthy. I've told you that about spring training. There are fringe players that are working for jobs, trying to stay healthy, trying to be in position to get called up, who take spring training seriously. The established veterans, they're getting ready for the season. What happens when you have a player who has a bad start? Yamamoto giving up 5 runs in today's game in one inning. Does that mean the Dodgers are in their suite right now, watching the game, saying, my God, we wasted $325 million. Holy cow, this guy's not better than Gerrit Cole. Doesn't work that way. Even the best pitchers have games where they give up 5 runs or more. Even the best position players have 20 games where they're hitting 210 during the course of a season, or 180 or 170, or no home runs or no runs batted in, or more errors than normal. There are always areas of a season when that happens, and real evaluators don't base anything on one game ever. Don't get too high, don't get too low. What about the Dodgers with Ohtani? Are they despondent that they're dealing with this distraction, that they had to fire his interpreter? Are they in the suite watching themselves potentially lose a game, go home with a split, and are they saying the juice was not worth the squeeze? Absolutely not. A couple of rumors have been out there about this Ohtani situation. This is not an opt-out. Ohtani cannot opt out of his deal. The Dodgers have the ability to break the deal with Ohtani if Ohtani violates any of the guarantee provisions of his contract. I'll tell you what some of those provisions are likely for Ohtani. There are prohibited activities. There are also prohibited actions. If Shohei Ohtani is convicted of a felony, the Dodgers will have the ability to get out of his contract. There's no indication that Ohtani's even been investigated. There's no indication that if he is, that it would be a felony. And there's no indication that even if he were, that he would be charged, that he would be found guilty, that he would be convicted. There's other provisions that go in contracts about what actions you can take and what can happen when it comes to criminal conduct that can lead to a guaranteed contract becoming non-guaranteed. We would always love it when players who were bad would do something, because then we could try to make the guaranteed part non-guaranteed, but it would never work. The Dodgers don't want to get rid of Ohtani. They want Ohtani to play. They want to win a World Series. They've won a COVID World Series in 20, and that's it, since 1988. They are making money with Ohtani right now, not going forward, but right now they can say to themselves, hey, this is amazing. We're only paying this guy $2 million, and we're getting huge Japanese sponsorships. We've increased our ticket prices. We are making money on Ohtani. 10 years from now, when they're paying him $68 million, believe me, they're not. But right now they are, and they don't want to give that up. No matter what the interpreter does, no matter what Ohtani is accused of or what confusion exists in the media today, and there's plenty of it, the Dodgers are in the suite right now looking at him and saying, eh, it's just business. Well, maybe for now, it's nothing personal.